Blandings Castle slept in the sunshine. Dancing little ripples of heat mist played across its smooth lawns and stone-flagged terraces. It was that gracious hour of a summer afternoon, midway between luncheon and tea, when nature seems to unbutton its waistcoat and put its feet up. In the shade of a laurel bush, outside the back premises of this stately home of England, Beach, butler to Clarence, 9th Earl of Emsworth, its proprietor, sat sipping the contents of a long glass and reading a weekly paper devoted to the doings of society and the stage. His attention had just been arrested by a photograph in an oval border of one of the inner pages, and for perhaps a minute he scrutinized this in a slow, thorough, pop-eyed way, absorbing its every detail. Then, with a fruity chuckle, he took a penknife from his pocket, cut out the photograph, and placed it in the recesses of his costume. At this moment, the laurel bush, which had hitherto not spoken, said, "Psst!" The butler started violently. A spasm ran through his ample frame. "Beach," said the bush. Something was now peering out of it. It was a tall young man with light hair. He recognized his employer's secretary, Mr. Hugo Carmody, and rose with pained reproach. "Startled you, Beach?"
"Extremely, sir."
"I'm sorry. Excellent for the liver, though. Beach, do you want to earn a quid?" The butler's austerity softened.
"Yes, sir."
"Can you get hold of Miss Millicent? Alone?"
"Certainly, sir."
"Then give her this note, and don't let anyone see you do it. Especially, and this is where I want you to follow me very closely, Beach, Lady Constance Keeble."
"I will attend to the matter immediately, sir."
"You know, Beach, life is rummy. Here I am at Blandings Castle, loving it. And yet when the project of my coming here was first placed on the agenda, I don't mind telling you the heart was rather bowed down with the weight of woe."
"Indeed, sir."
"Yes, noticeably bowed down. If you knew the circumstances, you'd understand why." Beach did know the circumstances. He was aware that young Mr. Carmody had been, until a few weeks back, co-proprietor with Mr. Ronald Fish, Lord Emsworth's nephew, of a nightclub called The Hotspot, situated just off Bond Street. That despite this favoured position, it had proved financial failure. That Mr. Ronald had gone off with his mother, Lady Julia Fish, to recuperate at Biarritz, and that Hugo had come to Blandings as Lord Emsworth's private secretary.
"No doubt you are reluctant to leave London, sir."
"Exactly. But now, Beach, as far as I'm concerned, anyone who likes can have London. Mark you, I'm not just saying that one brief night in the Piccadilly neighbourhood would come amiss, but to dwell in, give me Blandings Castle. What a spot, Beach."
"Yes, sir."
"A Garden of Eden, shall I call it?"
"Certainly, sir, if you wish."
"And now that old Ronnie's coming here, joy, as you might say, will be unconfined."
"Is Mr. Ronald expected, sir?"
"Coming either tomorrow or the day after. What was that thing you were cutting out of the paper just now?"
"A photograph of Mr. Galahad, sir. I keep an album in which I paste items of interest relating to the family. If you'd care to see the clipping, sir, there is a reference to Mr. Galahad's literary work."
A photograph, over which Beach had been relaxing, showed the perky features of a dapper little gentleman in the late 50s. Beneath it, in large letters, was the single word, "Galley." Under this ran a caption in smaller print: "The Honourable Galahad Threepwood, brother of the Earl of Emsworth." A little bird tells us that Galley is at Blandings Castle, Shropshire, the ancestral seat of the family, busily engaged in writing his reminiscences. As every member of the old brigade will testify, they ought to be as warm as the weather, if not warmer. Hugo scanned the exhibit thoughtfully and handed it back to be placed in the archives. "Has it ever occurred to you, Beach, that that book of his is going to make no small stir when it comes out?"
"Frequently, sir."
"Well, I'm saving up for my coffee. By the way, I knew there was something I wanted to ask you. Can you give me any information on the subject of a bloke named Baxter?"
"Mr. Baxter, sir?" "He used to be a private secretary to his lordship."
"Yes, so I gathered. Lady Constance was speaking to me about him this morning. She happened upon me as I was taking the air in riding kit and didn't seem overpleased. 'You appear to enjoy a great deal of leisure, Mr. Carmody,' she said. 'Mr. Baxter,' she continued, giving me the meaning eye, 'never seemed to find time to go riding when he was Lord Emsworth's secretary. Mr. Baxter was always so hard at work. But then Mr. Baxter took a real interest in his duties. Dear me, what a very conscientious man Mr. Baxter was, to be sure. Or words to that effect. What I want to know is, if Baxter was such a world-beater, why did they ever let him go?"
"I fancy, sir, there was some trouble."
"Pinch the spoons, eh? Always the way with these zealous workers.
I never succeeded in learning the full details, sir, but there was something about some flower pots.
He pinched the flower pots?
Threw them at his lordship, I was given to understand.
Hugo looked injured. Well, I'm dashed if I see, then, he said, where this Baxter can claim to rank so jolly high above me as a secretary. Not so much as a penwiper have I ever bunged at Lord Emsworth. Well, I must be getting about my duties. You won't forget that note, will you?
No, sir.
Hugo reflected. On second thoughts, he said, perhaps you'd better hand it back to me. Safer not to have too much written matter circulating about the place. Just tell Miss Millicent that you will find me in the Rose Garden at 6 sharp.
In the Rose Garden at 6 sharp. Very good, sir. I will see that she receives the information.
2 hours later, there sounded through the mellow, drowsy stillness a drowsy, mellow chiming. It was the clock over the stable striking 5. Simultaneously, a small but noteworthy procession filed out of the house and made its way across the sun-bathed lawn to where the big cedar cast a graceful shadow. It was headed by James, a footman, bearing a laden tray. Following him came Thomas, another footman, with a gate-leg table. The rear was brought up by Beach, who carried nothing but merely lent tone. Even as Thomas set gate-leg table to earth, there appeared, as if answering a cue, an elderly gentleman in stained tweeds and a hat he should have been ashamed of. Clarence, 9th Earl of Emsworth, in person. He was a long, lean, stringy man of about 60, slightly speckled at the moment with mud, for he'd spent most of the afternoon pottering around pigsties. He surveyed the preparations for the meal with vague amiability through rimless pince-nez.
"Tea?"
"Yes, your lordship."
"Who?"
said Lord Emsworth.
"Ah, tea, hey, tea, yes, tea. Ah, quite so, to be sure, tea. Capital."
One gathered from his remarks that he realized that the tea hour had arrived and was glad of it. He proceeded to impart his discovery to his niece, Millicent, who, lured by that same silent call, had just appeared at his side. Millicent was a tall, fair girl with soft blue eyes and a face like the soul's awakening. "Been down seeing the Empress, Uncle Clarence?"
"Eh? Oh, yes, yes, my dear, yes, I've been there all afternoon."
Lord Emsworth's mild eyes beamed. They always did when that noble animal, Empress of Landings, was mentioned. The 9th Earl was a man of few and simple ambitions. All he yearned to do by way of ensuring admittance to England's Hall of Fame was to tend his prize sow, Empress of Landings, so sedulously that for the second time in 2 consecutive years he would win the silver medal in the fat pigs class at the Shropshire Agricultural Show. Earlier in the summer there had been one breathless, sickening moment of suspense. That was when his neighbour, Sir Gregory Parslow Parslow of Matchingham Hall, had basely lured away his pigman, the superbly gifted George Cyril Wellbeloved, by the promise of higher wages. For a while, Lord Emsworth had feared lest the Empress, mourning for her old friend and valet, might refuse food and fall from her high standard of obesity. But the Empress had taken to Pirbright, George Cyril's successor, from the first, and was tucking away her meals with all the old abandon. "Mr. Carmody," said Millicent, stooping to tickle a spaniel which had wandered up to take potluck, "told me he'd never seen a finer animal in his life."
"Oh, well, I like that young man," said Lord Emsworth emphatically. He's sound on pigs."
"Yes, he's an improvement on Baxter, isn't he?"
"Baxter?"
His lordship choked over his cup.
"You didn't like Baxter much, did you, Uncle Clarence?"
"Well, hadn't a peaceful moment while he was in the place. Dreadful fellow, always fussing. Always coming round corners with his infernal spectacles gleaming and making me sign papers when I wanted to be out in the garden. Besides, he was off his head. Oh, thank goodness I've seen the last of Baxter."
"But have you?"
"Well, what do you mean?"
"Well, if you ask me," said Millicent, "Aunt Constance hasn't given up the idea of getting him back."
"Good God! Has she said anything to you?"
"No, but I have a feeling. I know she doesn't like Mr. Carmody."
Lord Emsworth exploded.
"Perfect nonsense! Utter, absolute dash nonsense! What on earth does she find to object to in young Carmody?"
He broke off and stared blankly at a handsome woman, the middle age, who had come out of the house and was crossing the lawn.
"Why, here she is," said Millicent, equally and just as disagreeably surprised. "I thought you'd gone up to London, Aunt Constance."
Lady Constance Keble was a woman of still remarkable beauty, with features cast in a commanding mould and fine eyes. These eyes were at the moment dull and brooding.
"I missed the train," she explained.
I met Sir Gregory Parslow. Lord Emsworth stiffened at the name. He kept me talking. He is extremely worried. Lord Emsworth looked pleased. He tells me he used to know Galahad very well a number of years ago, and he's very much alarmed about this book of his. He wanted me to try to find out if Galahad had put anything about him in it. "I'd better ask him now," said Millicent. "He's just come out of the house and seems to be heading in this direction." Lady Constance turned sharply, and following her niece's pointing finger, winced. The mere sight of her deplorable brother was generally enough to make her wince. The author, ambling briskly across the lawn, had now joined the little group at the tea-table. A thoroughly misspent life had left the Honourable Galahad Threepwood, contrary to the most elementary justice, in what appeared to be perfect, even exuberantly perfect, physical condition. He produced a black rimmed monocle, and screwing it into his eye, surveyed the table with a frown of distaste.
"Tea!"
Millicent reached for a cup. "Cream and sugar, Uncle Galley." He stopped her with a gesture of shocked loathing.
"You know I never drink tea. Too much respect my inside. Don't tell me you're ruining your inside with that poison."
"Oh, sorry, Uncle Galley. I like it. How's the book coming along?"
"Magnificently, my dear. Splendidly. I had no notion writing was so easy. Stuff just pours out. Clarence, I wanted to ask you about a date. What year was it there was that terrible row between young Gregory Parslow and Lord Burper, when Parslow stole the old chap's false teeth and pawned them at a shop in the Edgware Road?"
Lady Constance uttered a sharp cry.
"Oh, Galahad! You're not proposing to print libelous stories like that about our nearest neighbour." "Well, certainly I am. It's the best documented story in the book. Look, I tell you what, I'll say towards the end of the 90s. After all, exactly, it isn't so important. It's the facts that matter."
And leaping lightly over a spaniel, he flitted away across the lawn. Lady Constance sat rigid in her chair.
"Clarence, what are you going to do about this?"
"Do?
Well, can't you see that something must be done? Do you realise that if this awful book of Galahad's is published, it will alienate half our friends? Oh, if Mr. Baxter were only here."
Lord Emsworth started with such violence that his pince-nez fell off and he dropped a slice of seed cake.
"What on earth do you want that awful fellow here for? He would find a way out of this dreadful business. He was always so efficient. Baxter's off his head. Clarence, you really can be the most irritating person in the world. You get an idea and you cling to it in spite of whatever anybody said. Mr. Baxter was the most wonderfully capable man I ever met."
"Yes, capable of anything," retorted Lord Emsworth with spirit. "Threw flower pots at me in the middle of the night.
You know perfectly well that there was quite a simple explanation." "Well, I prefer to think the man was crazy, and that's the line that Galahad takes in his book."
Galahad is not putting that story in his book."
"Well, of course he's putting it in his book. As I say, the line Galahad takes, and he's a clear-thinking, level-headed man, is that Baxter was a raving, roaring lunatic. Well, I'm going to have another look at the Empress."
And he potted off pigwards.